hello, and welcome to another episode of The Dunker Spot. We are part of 342 Productions. I am your host, Nikias Duncan, and joining me as always is my co-host, Steve Jones Jr. Steve, how are you doing, sir?
Feeling good, feeling great, happy to be here, excited to be here. Thank you, Dunkers, for once again embracing your bounce. Dunker Nation, let's ride. Nikias, thank you for blessing us with your presence. live from an undisclosed location in Las Vegas once again. Suite looks great, bud. Congratulations.
The suite looks great. Okay.
Yeah. I'm glad you're able to, you know, avoid some wolves today. Wow. It's time. Time to hoop it up. And I will say, it's time to hoop it up. My brain is in a awful place. Barbie's had me in a headlock for 2 weeks, and I just found out The Blind Side wasn't really real, and I don't know what to believe no more, man.
Neither does James Harden, but it's been a wild time. I am in an undisclosed location in Las Vegas. I am in Las Vegas for the next 4 days, 5 days, 4 days. Either way, I'm here for the Commissioner's Cup championship game on Tuesday, and then the Aces and Liberty play once again on Thursday. So I'll be in the house for both of those. Very excited to watch those matchups up close and personal. Happy to be here as always. Yeah, I didn't anticipate the weekend / Monday morning to get as hectic as it did.
I will say this before we go on. I want to give a salute to the Basketball Hall of Fame.
Yes.
Because there are a lot of beautiful moments that took place. A lot of great speeches. It's always great to see people get their flowers and explain their journey and be able to thank those around them. I mean, too many to name. Powell was incredible. I thought Dirk was great. Becky was great. D-Wade was great. Like, it was just so great to see those kind of moments. Mm-hmm. And then you counter it with this gigantic mess.
Yeah.
Full of takes. And it's like, where are we going with this perception validation thing? Like, that man, James Harden, is going to be there one day.
Yeah.
And look at what y'all saying.
You know what? Let's actually start right there. I had the plan to start with some news and then flow into the Harden topic, but let's just start with James Harden. Let's start with the mess, get it out the way. That man turned on Ice Spice this morning, or whatever the time difference was, and said, that boy's a liar. I did not have that on the bingo card at all. And before I could register that I did not have it on the bingo card, the clip kept going. He's like, let me say that again. I was like, oh, this man is cutting a wrestling promo right now. And I just didn't know what to do with it. But what was funny to me was, one, all of it. But two, the wording was very careful.
Extremely. That's why I don't get why y'all didn't see what was going on. I kept waiting for someone to figure out why he said what he said, how he said it, and no one did. Just takes, 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 more takes. Have I said enough? No, more takes. No, he quit. He can't show up in the playoffs. He's not better than Dwayne Wade. He quit on three teams. He should have opted in. He should have opted out. A wink, wink deals. You can't do that. The CBA, suspensions, withholding rules. What happened to jokes? What happened to looking right there?
The man said, the reporting has gone from James Harden wants to be traded to the Clippers to, I will not play for an organization that has Daryl Morey. Friends, that is a shift. That is him say, all right, fine. I'll come back, but ... And that, aside from the jokes, because the jokes flew, I tossed out some after, you know, reacting, whatever. But after that, that should be what we are harping on. He just slid in some terms of engagement. Now, how realistic you believe those terms of engagements to be, that's a different conversation, one we can have right now if you want. I don't know if he's going to win that battle either. But that's a small yet important shift in this.
This is that, remember that step back one-legged shot he tossed out there? This is the trade request equivalent of that. I am trying something different. There are two levels to this. Let me publicly state, I don't want to do this. Mm-hmm. But also, let me let y'all know, hey, It's if over between us. Like, it's, you know what it reminded me of?
Mm-hmm.
You ever seen, like, the couple and just song lyrics start to intensify and get stronger and more frequent? And now you see the screenshots, the positive posts and the negative posts. And it's like, oh.
You sharing a whole lot of...
You are hinting at something.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like it's been hinted at a lot. And I'm trying to have fun with it because I was super annoyed because a lot of nasty work was done. And if you hear this and you did it, and it's going to hurt your feelings. And you know it. I don't know what... Like, what happened to jokes? The location... The line delivery. Folks, we got Kyrie Irving defending James Harden. Anyways, continue.
So, y'all, we just collectively harping on, like, well, he left Brooklyn. He should have took the money in Brooklyn. Do we remember why he wanted to leave Brooklyn and what was preventing the team from... All of this is funny. All of it's ridiculous, honestly. But mm-hmm. all of it is funny. But again, I will not play for an organization that has Daryl Morey. It's very strong wording. It's a very strong feeling. And for him to do that publicly blends into the make it messy path that we kind of saw in like Houston and stuff, where it's like, all right, I don't want to be here. I will stay, but you're not going to like it while I'm here. But it's also a new trick in the book. I mean, again, it gives him the out as well. Like, okay, I'll come back if... And again, like, I just frankly do not think that that part's going to work, honestly. I think it just ties more into, oh, he's serious about this. He's laying it out. This is a whole bunch of pub that we don't really like, don't really need, et cetera. And I think it's mostly just a ploy to help grease the wheels on a deal to the Clippers or somewhere. But yeah, that's a little bit different than the reporting and messaging that we've gotten earlier in this process. Also, to get that video and stuff, and then to not too long after get the report, Daryl Morey is unmoved. It's just like, well, that tracks. That's also funny.
James Harden, Damian Lillard, we are both looking at the same continuation of the feud, just in different ways. Different paths, different tracks. This obviously is a lot more messy. But it's, hey, I don't want to be here. Against, we need a better deal.
Yep.
That's it. That to me is it. I think if Daryl Morey had the deal he wanted, this would be done. But the problem is, teams are like, hey, man, it's August. You can hit us up in a little bit. We just made our moves. We don't know what we got yet, but I don't. We don't have all the information. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And I don't think we will. But it just feels like such a takeoff of previous thoughts and previous takes. Maybe it's just me, but I'm so tired of argument, discourse. Let's stop doing this. Next moment, we have an opportunity to revisit it. I'm right back here with the same take. And now I can be proven right. And it's like, so many things to talk about outside of that. It's clear this is just like a very personal thing. And there's a human element to it. You know what yes. I mean? Who hasn't been at a job or been in a friendship, relationship, partnership, expectations not being met? Obviously, James Harden, very successful, made a lot of money. But you got to think about the path of James Harden and Daryl Morey. The work they did in Houston, how that ended.
Yeah.
Came back together. How did they come back together?
Waves arms wildly.
You get the same ending. And like, you hit the nail on the head. I'm glad you said it. Because how many interviews has James Harden done this summer? You can count it on a hand, right?
Yeah.
Would you say he's someone who chooses his words carefully? Message.
And to bring it back full circle, that's what also just makes some of the discourse even more ridiculous. Because as we were joking about him saying it twice, he said it twice! He wanted to make sure everyone got, hey, I am unhappy. I do not want to be here. At bare minimum, I don't want to be here with him. And he said it twice with the Dr. Umar cadence. And over the head. It's fine, though, I guess. What a summer this has been. And I tweeted it out. I was like, you know, what does Joel Embiid think about all this?
Kind of tough.
It's just like, you had Jimmy stuff. You got Ben more stuff. That ends in Harden. Harden's hurt. Next year, really good. Harden's kind of hurt. Gets back healthy. Playoffs. Now you hurt. And now it's all of this with Harden. And it's just like, hey, man. I don't want to be like, you know, I don't want to exaggerate anything, but it's Joel Embiid is closer to 32 than he is to 23. I'll frame it that way. And it's just like, Joel's coming off the best season of his career. In theory, this should be heading into like one of the most important seasons in Sixers history, or at least Sixers recent history. One of the most important seasons for Joel Embiid. Like, all right, cool. Let's nail this offseason, because the next offseason sets up like potential max cap room, whatever the case may be. This should be a last hurrah of some sort. And it is the Harden situation. And then just going under the radar with all of this is like, Tyrese Maxey just hasn't gotten his max yet. Because they were kind of like eyeing the Dame thing for a little bit. That's not a thing. And now it's just like, well, what does any of this mean?
You wonder if you remove some of the parts, how much of the waiting game is because Daryl Morey has to nail this to a degree to where he can walk up to Joel Embiid and continue moving forward.
I think that's exactly it.
I feel like that's the bigger play that's being lost in the noise. He can't miss this one, because if he misses this one, as you stated, with the history of the Sixers, eventually Joel Embiid's going to be like,
what do I have?
Hey, what we got going on in here?
You know, I had Jimmy Butler All-Star. I had Ben Simmons All-Star. I had James Harden All-Star. I now have Tyrese Maxey, who I believe is an All-Star talent and will eventually make All-Star team. So it's not Maxey slander at all. It's more so pedigree, high draft pick pedigree, et cetera, et cetera. It all turned into messy trades. And now it is Tyrese Maxey and Tobias Harris, who is good but also expiring. We're going to have this max cap room for, we don't know yet, because the free agency landscape is changing and everyone is signing their deals and then asking for trades later. What does max cap space mean in 2023 or 2024? And so to your point, yeah, if you're Daryl Morey, like, one, he's Daryl Morey, so he wants to win the trade anyway. And naturally, every GM wants to win trades, but Daryl Morey very specifically wants to win in his way when it comes to these deals, which is fine. That's what made him as good as he is, along with the margin moves, etc. I understand Daryl Morey being like, well, I can't come to Joel Embiid with Norman Powell as the highlighter, as good as Norman Powell is. Because again, now you zoom out, the through line is, you know, we draft Joel, we get Ben. We flip some stuff. We get Jimmy Butler. Jimmy doesn't stay. We eventually have to trade Ben. We got James. We now have to trade James. He doesn't want to stay. Like, yes, in a, like a very pure and literal basketball sense, if you were saying James Harden doesn't want to be here and you're telling me I can get the shooting slash rim pressure of Norman Powell plus insert wing here, let's get Robert Covington if we want to get a guy who can play some four or whatever. Maybe he gets more consistent playing time, revitalizes himself, knocks down shots, etc. Like, sure, you can talk yourself into, we're going to trade this 20 for a 10, a 5, and like 2 1s. But when you zoom out to all of this and the overall vision you're trying to sell to Joel Embiid, who has also, like, jokingly or not, sent out some messaging, to say the least. We're not too far removed from the I want to win, whether it's in Philly or elsewhere, that he said he was trolling about. Like, we're not that far removed from that part from Joel Embiid himself. So, yeah, on the surface, it may be silly to haggle, like, what do you mean the Sixers ain't making this deal because they want Terrence Mann? They got to get literally everything they can in a James Harden trade if they have to trade him. And even then, if they get Norman plus Terrence plus draft capital or whatever, even then Joel might look at it and be like, I had a Hall of Fame guard. And you turned him into Norman Powell and Terrence Mann, who is not 21. Like, Terrence Mann's what, 25, 26? Good player. We talked about Terrence Mann on the pod, but it's just like the perception that and the vision that you're trying to sell to Joel Embiid. Like, this is a very delicate thing, which also makes it smart and, again, funny that James Harden is pushing the buttons the way that he is because he knows all of this. He doesn't have a ton of leverage. He opted into the contract. We know CBA, new rules, all that good stuff. He can make it messy, and ultimately, he has the potential to poison the well with Joel Embiid. And that is something that the Sixers cannot afford. Now, again, to what degree that you feel that matters or how much impact you think James Harden and him making it messy will have on Joel Embiid, if I'm Sixers brass, I don't even want that to be a 1% effect. 1% is too much. And so this is how we get here. And I'm curious to see how long this plays out. I'm curious to see how what happens as we get closer to training camp. Because this has been a lot.
If you want to blame James Harden or you want to talk about how he leaves teams, I totally get it. I understand. Just keep it in a box. Keep it in the right lane. Mm-hmm. It goes too far left. And for one, like if you want to criticize him, you could probably point to the opt-in. But he opted, or I mean the opt-out, mm-hmm. the initial one, to which he could have. He took a pay cut. You'd probably be like, hey, you didn't really have to do that. But wanted to win a championship. Believe in what they were doing. The moves were, what, PJ Tucker and Daniel House? So, like, the Rockets?
Yeah.
And who have they added this year?
They brought Montrezl Harrell back.
And Pat Bev. And yeah.
They brought Montrezl Harrell back.
You combine that and you think it's like, hey, if there were words exchanged or feelings that were expressed and things that were promised that didn't happen, or, you know, I think everyone's assuming it was, hey, a long-term deal. Maybe it will be. Again, we don't have all the information. Speculate. Maybe it could just be, hey, we're supposed to get a lot better with the moves that we were supposed to make. You know, yeah,
it may just be the added layer. Like, hey, not only did I give up some money as I approach my age X season, I gave up this much amount of money for you to do this.
And that's the other part is, I think, do people forget the type of year James Harden had? I may be wrong, but I believe there were only three players who averaged 20 points and 10 assists. James, Tyrese, and Trey.
He was very good.
Hey, actually, quick question to guys. Can you name the four players who had multiple 40-plus point games in the 2023 playoffs?
Ah, I see. Well, James Harden was one of them. That's
he was, along with Jokic, Jimmy Butler, Devin Booker.
He did have the other ones, the hashtag other ones. But he
did. I'm not taking that away. I'm not taking that away.
I understand.
But that series ain't a series if you don't do that. You know what I mean? Yeah. So I'm like, there's a middle ground here. We got to be able to find the middle ground here. It's weird, man. Like, I don't get it. Like, oh, he could have opted out. Where was he going to go? What team that had space was fitting what James Harden was looking for? I don't know, man. Correct me if I'm wrong.
James Harden, you are a San Antonio Spur with Victor Wembanyama, I guess.
Let me ask a wild question. If James Harden had just opted out and said, you know what, I'm going to sign with the Clippers on the minimum, I want to win, he'd be praised, right?
Probably.
Why is that the way it works? I'm just curious.
That flows into a whole other conversation. you know most of my thoughts on this, but it just flows into a whole conversation about how we talk about players and what the expectations are and how we feel our expectations should be their expectations and how they should fulfill their legacy in a very specific way. And if they don't, if they deviate from it at all, then they get slandered. And then it's, yeah. Though I will say, like, just going back to one of the early conversations we had, like, it was funny that he, like, took the haircut, sacrificed some of the money, and then talked about how unselfish he was and how he wasn't getting enough praise for it. And just like, well, friend, like, I feel you, but, like, that's generally not how that's supposed to go. Like, lowest of keys. And then I guess that's the other layer to all of this, too, because, like, I understand why he's upset and everything. It is funny to, like, balance that with, hey, Merry Christmas, everyone. Hello, Dunkers. Merry Christmas. Wait, what did Wold say? James Harden wants to go where? It's just like, hey, man, the Sixers about to play in 12 minutes. Huh? And then you ask him about it, and he's like, just noncommittal. It's like, oh, you can't do that either. Like, it is a very nuanced conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And to, again, to your general point, like, there has to be a middle ground found with all of this, I feel. Like, again, I just keep coming back to, this is funny. A lot of this is just funny that we are here. And I sent a tweet out earlier. I was like, I do kind of hate that we are now starting to lose, or we're in danger of kind of like losing James Harden, the basketball player, at a certain point in terms of how we talk about him. And the conversations are just going to be antics one, playoff struggles two, and then like resume and stuff. And I don't think that's how it's supposed to go. I understand why that is, obviously. And especially on today when all this happens, naturally you're just going to talk about all this stuff. But like, I just don't want it to be lost. One, how good James Harden still is. Like, you pointed out some of the stats and some of the statistical thresholds that he hit last season. And it wasn't a fully healthy campaign for him last season either. But also, like, historically, like, this was high draft pick to sixth man on growing team to they traded what for James Harden to he's averaging what in Houston to he's having what scoring season. He scored how many points in isolation to they have what the Rockets are up what on the Golden State Warriors. Like, he's just done a lot. And this is, you know, you hinted at it earlier, like, this is a first ballot Hall of Famer that we are talking about. And it's been a 15-minute conversation about all of this. And when I take a step back, like, that kind of stinks just as a basketball fan, because it's like, dang, dog, I'm laughing because it's funny, but, like, we're getting further and further away from James Harden's really freaking good at this. And so I just hope it doesn't go too far left. And so whether he winds back up in camp and more mess happens, or if he gets traded and he gets to the Clippers, then the conversation immediately flips to, well, they better win after all of this. And James Harden better average 20-10 in the postseason for the Clippers. Because if we get to all of this and James Harden has a 51 true shooting percentage in a round and a half with the Clippers, the conversation's going to get even nastier. And I'm going to hate it, but I'm going to understand it. It's just like, well, dang, dog. I don't want to be here with this.
I hear you.
Yeah.
It's what a Oreo that is. And it's like, hey, I get the takes. I get the opinions. I don't want to take that away. I might turn the volume down a little bit. But it's like, there's a reason that James Harden chose to do that in front of kids
in China,
in a whole different country. And I guess we don't want to talk about that. But that man's put out a picture post and rode a motorcycle on a basketball court afterwards. Like, why are we so mad right now? Hey, the story's gonna happen, the trade's gonna happen, we're gonna get the full bloodline reveal of what happened the last season that we didn't know about. It's coming. Everybody just breathe.
Oh, boy. Man, went to China, said, I'm out the playoffs. I'm out the Sixers. I'm out. I can't do this.
Deuces, ooses.
Okay. Speaking of the Sixers, they are one of the teams that were selected to highlight the NBA's Christmas schedule. As we got some Christmas, we just got some general scheduling leaks since the last podcast, so that's cool. We have the opening night slate. We got Lakers Nuggets, and then we have Suns Warriors, which two West Coast games to open is interesting. I'm curious to see like when those games are going to start. But those seem like really good matchups. Do you like those? Would you have preferred a different starter, or like how did you feel about the opening night matchup?
Oh, I love that. That's genius work to be able to get that doubleheader for opening night. Yeah, we've seen the league try and get creative by throwing different teams in different windows. Mm-hmm. So I'm assuming Denver's going to open the night up. I like Denver getting that spot. I wonder if they try and tap into it a little bit more. I'm actually just really intrigued with how TV views and leans in on Denver this year as a champion. Do they get the bump? This just seems like a layup. Like, defending champions, ring night, rematch of the Western Conference Finals. We got a hopeful Laker fan base. Anthony Davis, LeBron, Jokic. Hard to pass up on that one. And then you add, yeah, new look Suns and the Warriors. And we're not going to wait. We're not going to wait. There's no chance that you're not gonna be in this game, buddy.
Yeah. The Chris Paul revenge game. The Kevin Durant revenge game. Friends, we did it.
So, like, I saw the Eastern Conference or Leastern Conference jokes, and I just think it was an opportunity more than anything. We don't get enough Celtics, Bucks, Heat, Sixers. You know what I mean? We get that. You probably see it Friday.
Well, you see, on the opening Thursday, because the season starts on a Tuesday, the opening TNT Thursday matchup is Sixers-Bucks, which, yeah. So we got that. And then we got Suns-Lakers. That's going to be the first KD LeBron match. Man, listen. let me just get this out of the way early. I don't want to jinx it or anything like that. I never want anyone to get injured. If we get a LeBron or a KD like ankle tweak on Tuesday, and we do not get LeBron versus KD again, I'm going to be one unhappy camper. I'm not going to like it. I'm not going to like it one bit. But this is slated to be the first KD versus LeBron matchup since the Christmas Day game in 2018.
That's insane.
We better see that game on Thursday. Hey, come on.
I miss it. All right, I'm going to head out.
I'll take a open tonight. LeBron is 8 of 20 and 19 of his shot attempts are jumpers. To make sure that we get that game on Thursday. We need to see those two match up against each other. But no, those seem fun. And as for the Christmas slate, we got Bucks-Knicks. We got Sixers-Heat. We have Celtics-Lakers. We have Mavericks-Suns. And we have Warriors-Nuggets.
I'm very intrigued with the order of what these games are going to be more than anything else. For me, in the buildup, I was trying to guess, and I don't know what team would be missing from this slate, if that makes sense. I don't think this is the year for the Grizzlies.
No.
Clippers you can't trust. Pelicans you probably can't trust right now. So
the Kings in one of the later games?
I think the problem for the Kings is they would probably be perfect for that late night slot if Denver didn't exist. Like, Denver wasn't this good. And they could, you know, they had that late night slot like a few times recently.
Had it last year.
Yeah. So, I mean, if they're going to move up, someone else has to go down there. So you have to move Phoenix down there. You're just kind of stuck. Sacramento, you are now Memphis to that degree. So I think it'll come around for Sacramento if they get it. The other thing is, one football. It appears they are aware of the foosball this year.
Yeah, it's cooked.
I think the rumors of Sixers Heat being in that slot against football was funny. I'm sure Heat fans will not use that to feed the chip on their shoulder. It was also double funny because in the buildup, I was thinking, like, they're going to have to choose between the Sixers and in Miami. You got to pick one because, you know, waves arms wildly. Yeah. And they said, nope, they're going to play each other. We are leaving here with something.
Welcome to the trade bowl.
One of y'all did a thing. I know that much. I'm fine with the matchups. Everyone should probably understand if the New York Knicks are good or good adjacent, they will start Christmas Day. It's just going to be a thing. I was a little surprised that the Bucks were their opponent, but then I was like, oh yeah, football. Giannis, please.
Hey man, can you dunk, please? I beg.
Which, yeah, I got it. Like, again, like I had an eye on like the Kings and like maybe, I guess for me, as I was kind of doing the thought exercise, like, okay, the Kings felt like the team missing because I'm with you, like Memphis for very obvious reasons, which says nothing about the quality of team. Like, I think they're still going to end up being good during the Jawless games because they've just been good during the Jawless games. But you're trying to build a board around a Christmas matchup. Like, I don't think the league partners TV, like, if they put Desmond Bane on the graphic next to insert superstar here, or put Jaren on the graphic next to superstar here, it's not going to, through the league lens. I love both of those guys. But it, yeah. But anyway. And so I was like, okay. And then it just came down to like, okay, Kings versus Dallas for me. As one of those West Coast teams, like, well, they're not going to beat out Luka Kyrie. Which stinks because like the Kings may just flat out be better than the Mavericks. And like, I would like for these things to be more merit based, but like, I know how it goes ultimately. So like, that's what the only one, like also, I guess just on the fun scale, like if the Pelicans are healthy, that'll be a fun team to see on Christmas. If the Thunder are healthy, that would be a fun team, at least for me to see on Christmas. And like one of the earlier matchups, like that would have been cool to me. Like, I also recognize why that was not going to happen this year. So like, fine. But these felt like 10 of the top 12 teams that I would have in this kind of thing. So like, I don't have any real major beef. I'm with you. I'm curious to see like what the actual lineup ends up being in terms of the time slots, but it seems like the league did pretty well here.
Although sending Luka to Phoenix on Christmas is kind of rude.
Yeah.
I'm pretty juiced for Warriors Nuggets. I feel like that's an underappreciated matchup. It's mm-hmm. fun. And I feel like we actually haven't seen it for a while because of injuries. Mm-hmm. I feel like they played early last year and then it was just, well, people aren't available. So.
Oh, gosh. Don't take me back to all them darn playoff preview pods. It's like every segment start off with, well, I want to go back and see what these teams did against each other. However, insert stars/starters were missing in all of them. You know, we'll see. I guess while we're Knicks adjacent, shout out to Josh Hart getting a 4-year, $81 million extension, average 10-7-4 as a member of the Knicks during the regular season, 10-7-2 during the playoffs. The shooting percentage just did drop off, particularly from three in the playoffs, but the Knicks drastically won their minutes with Josh Hart on the court. Seems to be a good addition. They are just accumulating literally all of the Villanova good players, like the Infinity Stones. So like, that's cool. Any general Josh Hart New York extension thoughts?
I mean, I like the fit with Josh Hart and the Knicks right when that move was announced. I think he really showed up for them. So I understand why they kept him. The defense pop, screen navigation, defending multiple positions. He played with aggression too, which is important. Balances their bench, helps give them some lineup versatility. I like it. And it's a reminder, again, fit, opportunity, role, so key for a player's success. I'm sure it's nice for him to get that commitment and probably feel like he has a home. I'm keeping an eye on the aggression, and the shooting is going to have to carry over to a degree. I don't think it's going to be as extreme as last year, but you look at last year, what he made 34 threes in 51 games for Portland, shooting 30%. And in 25 games in New York, he made 27 threes, shooting 51%. Somewhere in between, but he's going to have to keep that mindset because it's clear what his value is to that team. Mm-hmm.
And that's going to be the big thing. Like, he doesn't have to be, I don't even think he has to be like a 40% three-point shooter. If he's 36, 37%, I just want him to take three or four a game. Like, that's my thing. Because, like, even in some of the early goings, you get, like, the first eight games with him as a Knick. It's like, holy crap, he's shooting what from three? And it's like, oh, 2.5 attempts. Well, neat. And that's more than what you were doing towards the tail end of the Portland stretch.
which says a lot about what the end of the Portland stretch was. But that still isn't enough to change the scouting report, if that makes sense.
Well, as long as he gets out of the liability zone. Because the thing about the end of Portland was teams were like, I'm stashing up big on you.
Yeah.
I'm helping all the way off. So he just needs to avoid that. That mm-hmm. can't carry over. Whatever you do, stay away from that. Because if that carries over, now you get, it's not going to be good.
There's simply not enough spacing in New York for you to also, because he's very important to their lineup versatility, very important to them defensively. But it's just like, hey, man, the Knicks are very good. 3-point shooting aces, they are not. So, like, you can't afford to Josh shoot the ball. I think he will. So, we'll see. It's just been a solid offseason for the Knicks. But, I mean, I'm curious to see what the team looks like next year. We are, what, a month and a half away from, like, season preview content? On the NBA side, we're still very much in W season, but it's good work to get Josh Hart on this kind of extension. Also, like with the cap rising, like what percentage of the cap is this even going to account for? It's pretty low, I would imagine, like comparatively. So like it's not a bad deal at all. Like it's fair value. He's secure. I think it's just good work for everyone around. Other free agent signing, we have Derek Jones Jr. signing with the Dallas Mavericks, a 1-year deal there. How do you feel about the fit? Because I've kind of gone back and forth on it.
I like the idea. I'm intrigued by the concept here. I think it's a solid move for a couple reasons. I don't like Dallas is not trying to get right back to the formula they had, but it's clear they're pushing closer to it than they were last year. So I think his defense is going to help. They need someone who can defend multiple positions, or at least another person with that type of size who could do it. I think he fits with what Dallas likes. He could give them some lineup versatility. He's got size, length, athleticism. Athletic wing defenders have found success there. The next portion of it is, okay, where and when does this work? Where does he fit? Like, that's where I'm like, the minutes are going to be interesting because I understand the concept. Like, is he just Maxi Kleber insurance to a degree? But can they hit the high notes? Like, is he going to get some minutes at the five? Are they going to be able to go small ball five?
Mm-hmm.
Can he be a screener with Luka and Kyrie? Is he going to be able to drive closeouts if they have teams in rotation? Like, what does that look like? That's where I'm like, I like it, but also, where are you at?
I think for me, I kind of landed on, I like that Dallas is targeting this specific skill set. I don't know if I like it for Derek specifically.
Hmm.
Like, it makes sense that Dallas wants a rangy, like, wing/forward type vertical spacer, add some athleticism to a room that still desperately needs it. Cool. But then it's like, all right, the Mavericks have ranked where in pace the last 3-4 years? Like, I don't think they've been above 25th in the Luka era. This isn't a team that plays fast, and this isn't a team that gets out in transition a bunch. And so from there, it's just like, okay, what does Derrick Jones Jr. do in the half court? Shooting, the answer is no. Initiation, the answer is no. To the attacking closeout portion, there has to be a big pocket of space for him to where he can get to one dribble, and then his launching pad as a dunker is insane. But if you're asking him to put the ball on the floor twice, I don't feel great about it. And with the screening, it's more so he slips out of them early, and which makes me question, okay, who is he going to be paired with? He kind of has to be with a Kyrie or a Luka. Because, like, I just don't know if the Jaden Hardy, Derrick Jones Jr. pick and roll is going to hit.
It's going to hit for one person involved.
You know what I mean? It's just like, with his brand of screen, because like Derek is a very lanky guy. Like he's getting out and you can toss the ball anywhere within a 10-mile radius, he can go up and get it. But like he's not going to be prying guards open and creating a 2v1 in a traditional sense. Like it's going to be someone that can draw two to the ball and maybe you can slip it out to him early. And so you kind of have to tether him with one of the stars whenever he's out there. But if you're doing that with him at the four, are you playing him with Maxi if he's not starting? Which then flows right back into, hey, is Maxi shooting this year? like shooting well. Because when the threes are hitting for Maxey, it's an entirely different concept for the Mavericks. When the shots are not falling, it's also an entirely different context for the Dallas Mavericks. And I just worry, like, because he's not starting barring a bunch of injuries. If all of his units are just going to be switch fests, then, like, how much opportunity is he going to get? Like, some of those slipping pockets are going to be there for him. But, like, will it be enough for it to make him pop, if that makes sense?
Well, I think that's why I asked, would he be at the five? I don't think he has much juice at the four for them.
Yeah, but then you look at the center room, and it's like they have eight of them.
They do. They do. But you know, Jason Kidd loves a small ball lineup. He loves to throw some things at the wall. So you're out on Derrick Jones Jr. You're saying the bid is they're going to have Maxey Kleber and other Maxey Kleber.
It's like, I just don't know if he pops in Dallas.
Where would he go? Like, where would he pop then? Now we're here.
Portland, but no. you know, just bring him back. But no, like, I would like to see him with, like, would you feel better about the signing if it was Charlotte?
For him, probably. Impact wise, probably not.
Okay. I'm just trying to think of, like, up tempo team that will, one, just get him more possessions and more opportunities to pop. And also, like, we do not have 12 bigs, so we can actually play you at the five sometimes. And, or, hey, we are a team that is willing to play a bunch of zone. So even if you aren't at the five, you at least have some utility defensively, and that way you can get out and run if we force turnovers. And so that's where I'm just like, I feel like I like it more for Dallas than I do for him, if that makes sense. It may not, but like that's kind of the loop that I've been in with the signing, which very dunker spot that we are spending 10 minutes on Derrick Jones Jr.'s fit.
Yeah.
But yeah, I've just been in a, yeah, we'll see. We'll see. Anyway, let's move to the W side. We have two basketball games between Monday and Thursday. Both of them involve the Las Vegas Aces and the New York Liberty. In fact, they are facing each other in these two games. The Commissioner's Cup Championship game is on Tuesday night. And then just a regular season game on Thursday. And that's just the W slate until Friday, in which everyone else, I guess, aside from those two teams play. And we are back to the running and we'll get our schedule banterling. Anyway. We got a pair of Aces Liberty matchups coming up this week. The season series is split right now. The Aces with a big win in the first game. That was not as close as the final score indicated. It was a 98-81 victory. And then the Liberty responded by handing the Aces what was almost the worst loss in franchise history. I think it was 99-61 there. So first and foremost, I would just like to see a close game between those two. I don't care who, if it's Liberty by five, if it's Aces by five, that part I don't care. I just want to see a fourth quarter that matters between these two teams. That would be neat. Because mm-hmm. Now that I think about it, this feels very like 2016 finals adjacent, or like 2013 finals adjacent rather. Whereas like it ended up being like a legendary series, but like the early games of the series are just like, oh, well, we're just better than you tonight. No, we're better than you tonight. And it's just like, okay, what do we do with any of this? So I guess with this little two-game series of sorts, with only one counting towards the regular season standings, but whatever, what are some of the things that you are looking for from the, we'll start with the Liberty side first. What kind of things are you looking for on the Liberty side in these two matchups?
Well, number one, to bounce off you, it's going to be fun. I'm glad they're playing two games. So even if there is another blowout, we get another version of it. And it's just fun to watch them play. Like, these two teams are humming right now. I am ready to go. I am primed and ready to go. I am amped up.
That's a good shot.
I wonder how this is going to go. The Aces didn't take kindly to that loss, by the way.
No.
Beat the Wings by 20, beat the Mystics by 24, beat the Dream by 21. That's the last three games since they've seen each other. I think they're going to be ready. As far as the Liberty go, I'm trying to see how do they now respond? Because they showed their hand to a degree. And I think the battle is going to be defense. In these two games, we've seen whichever team brought their defense to the table really imposed their will. So for Liberty, can you recreate that? You had a lot of activity. You mixed in some switches. You worked to keep the ball in front. You showed help. You recovered. You did what you were supposed to do. It helped. You now have to do it again against a team that just saw you do it and didn't feel great about it. So now what can you do? Can the Aces now, and it ties up the Aces, so I'm sorry, but how do the Aces exploit what the Liberty showed? Can they move Stewie and Jonquil around the floor? Because that's a big key, is their activity, not just at the level, but the other one playing behind and kicking people out of matchups, enhancing those switches. I mean, I've seen, I watched the Liberty and watched the rotations. They do some wild stuff. Like, literally, it was a pin down in the Fever game. Benai Delaney was guarding the ball. I think it was Kelsey Mitchell caught it, and Benai Delaney just took it. And Stewie flowed out to the wing, and I was like, huh? So they're stupidly locked in there. So for me, it's the defense for Liberty. Can they keep the ball in front? And then offensively, are you going to be able to find your comfort? Because it's one thing to have some of these nights where the offense isn't there. You're trying to find your way. It's another when you're facing the Aces. And those stops are buckets. And it's not as simple as, hey, Stewie, can you do something for us? So you're going to need Sabrina to continue to attack. You're going to need Benai Delaney to post up and open up things that way. You're going to need to open up the Jonquil package. You're going to need your small lamps to hit. So that would be my Liberty portion. Am I throwing it to you for the Aces?
I would have bounced off of the Liberty portion first, and then I will kind of give my Aces thoughts. I say on the Liberty portion, like, I'm with you. Like, their defense has to, I guess, continue setting a tone. I was at Liberty practice a little bit earlier before we recorded. Got to talk to Sandy Brundello a little bit, and she was beaming when I asked her about the defense and how it's been this year and how it's looked post All-Star break. She is very pleased with the growth that this team has showcased throughout the year. And I think just that mix of, we will flatten you out with switches, and also we are comfortable having Jonquil Jones really high up the floor. Knowing that, one, she is just massive, so good luck trying to dribble around her or trying to fit a pass over her. But even if you somehow do so, yeah, deal with 6'4", 7'1", wingspan Breonna Stewart behind that. That's cool. Have fun with that. And so seeing them kind of nail those two schemes, but also the nuances between those two, Steve already hit on the rotations. The scram switches have really perked up for them as of late. They have to continue to do that, because this is an Aces team that can, one, just move the ball really well, generally. Like, this is, they have the highest offensive rating in league history for a reason. It's not just because of one-on-one bucket getting, though they can obviously do that too. They move the ball very well. And so you can't really afford any slippage there. And then beyond that, if you are able to kind of corral them a bit, the Aces can lean on that one-on-one portion. And like Asia talked about post-game of that Liberty loss, like, I went 2-14. Like, that's just not happening again. That's not what I do. Like, even within that game, I think the Liberty did a really good job defending her overall. So I'm not going to take that away from them. But even within that good performance, there were some mid-range jumpers over soft contest that Asia just missed that she normally makes. And so, like, does the tide turn a little bit? Still maybe a Liberty win in that first matchup. Because, again, that was a historic loss for the Aces. But, like, does the tide turn a little bit if Asia hits some of those jumpers that she misses versus here's another leak out and now it's a 12-0 run versus just a general back and forth? So they have to be keyed in. I think the other thing I add on the Liberty portion offensively, and something that stood out to me as I was working on a Commissioner's Cup preview for W.com. That should be out soon. But I went back and watched the first matchup. Went back and watched both of them. But going through the first matchup, I was like, huh. I'm glad I went back and watched this, because the Aces threw out a whole lot of unders in this one. And watching, like, Courtney Vandersloot pass up shots or miss shots, watching Sabrina miss pull-ups, like, no, you have to continue to do that. And, like, watching that game and then going back to the Liberty big win and watching all the threes that Sabrina made, it's like, yeah, she punished the heck out of that. And that took that, it took the unders off the table almost for the Aces, or at least in regards to Sabrina. It took the unders off the table. And so it kind of forced the guard to either fight over, or they had to play the big higher. Or it turned into more switching, and the Liberty were able to play out of that. And they very successful with post-ups in that game. the guards have to punish the aces if they are defending them conservatively. I think is my other general liberty point.
Makes sense. I got a question for you bouncing off that real quick.
Okay.
Is the bit just, hey, Sabrina Ionescu, not you. You want to shoot? That's cool. Driving, not today. We're not doing that again. Do you think we see more zone or just smaller lineups from the A's?
I guess I wouldn't be, honestly, I don't know how much zone we see from the Aces in this one. I do think we're going to get smaller lineups by default just because Alicia Clark did not play in the Dream game. She was a late scratch against the Dream with the back injury. And Becky Hammon said post game that they are erring on the side of caution and Alicia will be back when she feels better. I don't know what that means. I'll try to get some answers at shoot around tomorrow, but I don't know what that means for as far as the timeline. She did not give a timeline. So we may just not see Alicia Clark in at least the Tuesday game and maybe both of these matchups. Which, with Candace Parker out, they were already trending towards some smaller lineups, and now it's just like, well, do they size back up with Kayla George, who had a good game against Atlanta, but it might be a little bit different against this Liberty team with the things she has to defend? Do we just see them continue to, you know, play smaller, play the guards more minutes? Kirsten Bell, you're up. As she's gotten more playing time, she's played a little bit better. I think they're going to trend a little bit smaller because, like, I just don't know how much the faith level in Kayla George defensively gets a little tough. And Becky Hammon talked about this a little bit post-game of the Dream game as well, where it's like Kayla hasn't had a ton of reps because of the big room being Asia, who soaks up a bunch of minutes, and Candace, who also was soaking up a good bit of minutes before she went down, and Kia Stokes, who's been soaking up minutes. And then they go small with Alicia Clark. And so, like, even the practice reps for her hasn't really been there. And so she's been trying to execute the multitude of defensive coverages that the Aces throw out there on the fly. I would be worried about an 18-minute game from Kayla George against the Liberty with the way that their offense is humming right now. And so I think the trust factor in this game would probably trend towards the smaller lineups with Kirsten Bell. And I'm curious to see, like, how the Aces navigate defensively with these smaller lineups. Because the switching has been good on balance this year. We've also seen very high variance with the switching in these two matchups so far with the Aces and the Liberty. Game one, yes. Game two, no. It did not work. And now you're removing Alicia Clark, or it's likely that you are removing Alicia Clark from the equation in this one as well. So I'm curious to see what that looks like, just what the Aces are going to look like from a lineup versatility standpoint to begin with, and then just how the scheme versatility kind of bleeds into that. Beyond that, I have an eye on the backcourt for the Aces. Chelsea Gray versus Bynai Jelani is going to be very interesting. I think Bynai did a very good job in the last matchup. Chelsea was still able to find some pockets and make some tough shots in that first quarter, which, again, the Aces lost that game by like 38, and they were leading after one, which is insane to me. But Bynai Jelani versus Chelsea, Kelsey Plum had some matchups, also didn't play well in the last Liberty matchup. How is she going to handle pressure when they toss it out to her? That she had the jumper going, was the decision-making going to be like? Becky Hammon has talked all year long about how well the downhill reads have been for Kelsey Plum this year and the growth that she showcased there. That's going to have to be there. And defensively, they're both just going to have to be locked in. Like, Chelsea's held up pretty well on switches. Some of the stuff in space hasn't been the best this year. And Kelsey Plum, who I think on balance has had a good defensive season, it was one of her worst performances in the last Liberty game. And just in general, the perimeter containment for the Aces has been kind of wonky post-All-Star break. And so I'm just kind of keeping an eye on that. I guess those would be like my major thought bubbles from the Aces portion.
I hear you. I think for me with the Aces, it's that last game, it felt like they left some meat on the bone.
Mm-hmm.
As far as playing out of it, as opposed to the first time these two teams played. I remember that, I think there was a play, Kelsey Plum ends up setting an inverted pick and roll for Asia. The Liberty switch, Sabrina Ionescu is now guarding Asia Wilson. Guess what happens?
I'd imagine it doesn't end the way that it should.
A rescreen. And so Sabrina Ionescu is no longer guarding Asia Wilson. Just little things like that. I think if there's going to be switching, let's attack that matchup and keep the pressure up. I think on the drive and kicks, get our spacing right. Use your spacing to your advantage. You know the Liberty are going to help. A lot of teams like to attack the Liberty guards. Play out of the help. Keep the pressure on. I think that will help them. Their flow will be better. And I think defensively, it's just, I imagine they're going to be a little bit, they're going to be ready. I think the ball pressure is going to be there. Rotation is going to be there. When the aces are locked in, it's pretty tough. Mm-hmm. But I just think making sure they explore more offensively in this matchup is going to be better. Move Stewie around. Move Jonquil around. Attack the pressure points. Force help. Play out of it. You have shooters. You have scoring. Just more of a purpose. I think it caught them off guard a little bit to a degree. Mm-hmm. The consistency of the Liberty's defense. And for me, it's still more the Liberty defense praise than hey, yeah. The Aces were bad. I just think the Aces probably could have done more in that contest than they did.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm very curious. How do you feel about the Aces defense going into this one?
Just going into it, it's eh. Not even eh. Like it's, I have to check to see what it was, what it is now after the Dream Game. I knew heading into the Dream Game yesterday that they were 7th in defensive rating post All-Star break. Now, the funny part about that is that the that Liberty loss basically accounted for like 4 points per 100 possession. I did some filtering there. I was like, okay, let me make sure I'm not tripping here. So before the Liberty game, post All-Star break up until the Liberty game, the Aces were 2nd in defensive rating. It was like 98.6 was their defensive rating. After Liberty game, it was like 102.6. I was like, yo, they got blasted. That's crazy. So that game is the biggest reason for they are in 7th. But like general slide, like the Mystics scored on them and did so well. Dallas, quiet as kept, ended up with a pretty solid offensive rating against Vegas. They just jumped on them early with the zone and that threw them off. And then the Dream game, like that was just a muggy one. So like that was more up to the standard that the Aces want to have. And even then, there were some pockets within that game where it's like, hey, what is the Aces transition defense right now? What's going on here? This doesn't seem great. So like there have been enough cracks or enough things to eye. Like me and you have talked about like the Aces versus the empty side pick and roll for most of the year. And this is while they were the best defense in basketball. And so there's enough there where I'm just like, man, if the Liberty are locked in, one, they're just really freaking talented, so they can just do it anyway. But two, if the Aces aren't locked in, they can just flat out exploit them defensively. And then you factor in, and the Aces win against the Liberty, Candace Parker and Alicia Clark. In this upcoming game on Tuesday, you likely won't have either one. You definitely won't have Candace. You're losing two of your better defenders this year as well. So like, there's even more... It's even more imperative for them to be locked in from an attention to detail standpoint. Like if Stewie's knocking down contested shots over you, this is why Stewie is a top two player in the world. It happens. If Sabrina's bombing away with a hand in her face, this is why Sabrina's one of the best guards in the W. If it just turns into, hey, why is Breonna Stewart posting up Kelsey Plum in the free throw line again? Hey, what's this transition defense? Hey, man, they run an empty side. Why are two people over here and everyone else is looking at the opposite corner as someone roams free for a layup? You can't have those against this Liberty team. You can't have those, period, but you especially can't afford against this Liberty team. So I'm kind of like, eh, with the Aces defense right now. We've seen they've been the best defense in the league for a majority of the season. So obviously they can do it.
No, I mean, you got my mind going to little things. Like, I think the switches could be better. I do wonder how they handle the dynamic with the Liberty's bigs because of where Jonquil spaces and the tempo they play with when they're humming. It felt like Asia would end up engaged if they didn't switch.
Mm-hmm.
And so you ended up with two on the ball and Kia Stokes was having to rotate from the wing.
Yeah.
To try and help or they would mess up a switch or something like that. So that's where I'm like, okay, which notes are you going to hit? How much are you going to hit them? And then can you keep the spacing and keep that same pressure on Jonquil? Because Jonquil's help was huge as far as some of Asia's drives.
Sure was.
And Kelsey's drives and Jackie's drives. Everyone's drives. can they alter that and get back to that space to now, hey, we can see what the Liberty are doing and rotating. But I think defensively, it's just avoiding little breakdowns, trying to make sure you have your help and recover set up. And I think it'll be a fun one.
A fun one indeed. Last question I have for you, very general, like preview-ish question for you. Who are your X factors heading into this game? Can be one, can be four, however you want to take it.
For New York, it's Benaj Elaney and Kayla Thornton.
Okay.
I think they are just going to be so important defensively. Help the small lineups. They need those two to perform. Benaj's done a great job posting up. They're going to need that. I think Kayla Thornton's got to continue to be the glue. That's key for them. The aces, it's hard not to say Kia Stokes. Because of her size, with the two bigs the Liberty played, with the last game where the Liberty said, hey, our big rotation is them. So how much of that can she absorb, and can she flip the script defensively? Then offensively, what's the impact going to be? Because, I mean, the tricky part with the aces is they can go small, the Liberty can go small, but if the Liberty stay big and the Liberty rebound, now what type of night do you have?
Yeah. So
that's where I value that importance. What say you?
Okay, I got you. Good call on the Benaja point, especially since, again, like, she's gotten the Chelsea matchup. Like, the Liberty have just enjoyed deploying her on guards and, like, okay, if we're going to switch anyway, we're going to cut the head off the snake here. Benaja's just going to hound you. And then she can switch if necessary. So I think that's going to be an important one. For me, Liberty X Factor is going to be Jonquel for me. Which is always funny because just in a vacuum, she's very overqualified for like the X Factor role, because you don't really take like, okay, who's the fourth starter or who's this key reserve that can change the tide. It's Jonquel for me because her defense is so freaking important to everything that the Liberty want to do, both in terms of the aggression and also the switching that they want to do.
You sound like me.
Yeah. It's almost like, you know, my ears open, you know, but she's so important to what they do defensively. And it also just feels like anecdotally, and like if I was a better podcaster, I would just have like specific stats for this. But it feels like the Liberty losses or like the Liberty nail biters have been like the Jonquel foul trouble games. Or the Jonquel just doesn't have a game on either end. And so in light of the last matchup and something that you expertly pointed out, it's like, hey, the big man rotation is just Jonquel and Breonna Stewart. And like they still, I think Stephanie Dosa was still out at that point. But yeah, it's like, huh, they've kind of shortened this. If we get a Jonquel's getting blasted on switches game, or Jonquel with 5:43 left in the first quarter, Jonquel Jones has two fouls. And now you have to tap into more Stewie at the five, which, oh no, we have to play Breonna Stewart at the five more. But if you're now limiting your lineup versatility, or you have to go to more Steph Dolson, or you just have to go into the actual reserve bigs, that opens up a pocket for the aces. With what Jonquel does defensively, her spacing, as you just alluded to, with how you can kind of manipulate Vegas' help because Jonquel can shoot. The offensive rebounding. The Liberty have been one of the best offensive rebound teams in the W this year, creating extra possessions against the aces, who are now going to trend smaller with no Candace and likely no Alicia Clark. She can turn this game on its head just by being good and available. And if she's MVP Jonquel, the Aces are going to have a very long night, or long nights, accounted for Tuesday and Thursday. So Jonquel for the Liberty, I'm with you on Kia. Like, the defense is going to have to pop, and like some of that's just going to be like, where is she going to be spaced? Where is she defending? She's going to have to eat some of those Jonquel post-ups. Can she contest without fouling? Can she clean the glass and help the Aces get out in transition so they can get some easy ones and force the Liberty to play against the set defense more often than they did in that second matchup? That's going to be very important. Offensively, the Liberty helped so far off of her in that second matchup. And again, it's like, I understand use Akia as a screener because you don't really want to have her as a spacer so the Liberty can help off. But it's just, I talked about this a little bit during the watch party yesterday. It's like Kia is making great contact on the screens. It's not the typical issue that I have with big screening. She gets contact, but it's like the angle in which she's getting the contact, it's not really opening herself up as a roller. And I'm not sure how much the Aces, like, I don't want to use trust because that's too strong. But like if Asia and Kia set the same level of screen on a possession,
Asia's getting the ball 10 out of 10 times. For Kia, it might be 6 out of 10. And so it's even more important that, hey, I got to make sure I at least pry this guard open and at least give the illusion of this is a 2v1. You got to make a decision versus some of the stuff that I've been seeing. Then off the ball again. The Liberty don't care about her as a spacer. And so does she parlay that into a kick to Kia in the corner, quick handoff, or just a dive if someone helps way off of her? What kind of offensive utility are we going to see from Kia? So I think just the starting centers, I guess, is my answer for the expected question as I get to the end of that. So that's cool. But that's kind of where I land. Ultimately, though, I am very excited about these matchups. Two very good teams. We'll not call them super teams because neither one of them want to be referred to as super teams. So the two best teams in the W in terms of record and net rating. Very excited to see what that matchup holds. Any closing thoughts on that game or those games, rather?
I'm just excited to see. I'm excited to see them continue to play. Great timing as far as, again, both these teams are sharpening their iron. I mean, the Liberty have won, what, 6 straight coming into this? They've won their last 7 road games. They're on their journey. The Aces have been incredible. I am just enjoying watching them play basketball, especially as they continue to get better, and now they're having to prove what they can do against a very good team. They may not be super teams, but this is going to be a super matchup.
There we go. That's how we rebranded the super matchup. Girl, we did it. Let's get, we're over an hour in. We have a bunch of mailbag questions. Let's get to a couple. First and foremost, thank you to those who sent in questions. If you ever have basketball questions for us, you don't have to wait for a prompt. Email us at dunkerspot@yahoo.com. That's dunkerspot@yahoo.com. Second, we are starting with Richard. It's been like 3 weeks. We loved the question immediately. We knew he was going to have to take some time with it. And we keep getting into other. It's like, well, let's get into some of these quicker mailbag questions. And Richard, we are sorry. Thank you again for sending in this question. We're going to get to it right now. We're going to dig in, and then we will evaluate time after we get here. But we're going to start with Richard's question, who says, hello, friends. Love the pod. Can each of you draft a 5-person lineup to theoretically play against the other's 5-person lineup? And your player pool is the NBA and WNBA. You have to choose at least 2 players from each league. What would each of your teams try to do on offense and defense? Steve gets first pick since he doesn't have access to the email. I want to stop you right there. Steve not having access to the email at this point is because Steve did not want access to the I sent that man the email password when I made the email.
Have you sent it since?
You should have it already.
I told you, old phone, man. Old phone.
This is so nasty. But either way, Steve, you get first pick. We will draft our 5, and then we can talk about what we want to accomplish.
There's a reason why I never have first pick. Give me Breanna Stewart.
Okay, very cool. Breanna Stewart would have been my first pick as well, so that is very stealthy on your part. Let me take Chelsea Gray.
That hurt my heart.
Sorry.
Because that was my next pick.
Yeah, so we both had the same top 2. I would imagine we had those 2 as for very similar reasons.
Well, if that's the case, I'm going Kelsey Plum.
Okay. Not the player that I thought you would go for on the W side, though now it just makes sense that that would be the player that you go for on the W side. Is it just the healthy pool? Are we just assuming everyone's healthy in this case?
Yes, we'll just do that. I feel like it's dangerous. I feel like I just got God.
No, it's nothing like that. Because my stealth pick that I probably was just overthinking, it was probably going to be Gabby Williams.
Ew.
Because it's the defense, but also like the length and stuff. So like I feel good about her on guards. Just period. And so like if I was like I need to come out of this with at least 2 of Chelsea, Stewie, Gabby, if I can. And so that would conclude my W portion.
You went Gabby?
Yeah, I went Gabby.
All right, give me Nikola Jokic.
Ah, I see. That is hashtag very cool. Now I'm even more glad that you ain't get Chelsea Gray, because, buddy, I did not need to listen. Chelsea Gray, Nikola Jokic pick and roll, or a Jokic Chelsea Gray pick and roll would have had me very upset for a very long time. Anyway, I will take Giannis.
Taking Giannis. Give me Kevin Durant.
Okay, makes sense. I will take LeBron then.
That hurt my feelings. Mm. That was my next pick.
Sorry, pal.
Well, that makes it very interesting. That makes it very interesting. Oh, that cooked me, low-key. Because, I'm not going to like the matchups if I pick who I want to pick.
Mm-hmm. That's what I can.
Not going to like the matchups at all. I'm about to say something wild.
Oh, this is going to be good.
You know what, man?
You're about to pick Marcus Morris.
Hey, man. Screw it. Give me Steph Curry, man.
Steph Curry?
You're going to have to guard us. Buddy, we got shooting movement. Hey, we'll find zone.
You reckon? Oh, Lord. Well, you know, I got to get the Steph stopper, Fred Van. No, I'm just kidding. Oh, geez. I guess my final selection. I'm just trying to think. Like, I know Jokic's going to be at the level. I'm just like, okay, who can we use to unlock? I'm very excited for, like, Chelsea Giannis pick and roll. Like, that's going to be a fun time. That's going to be a really fun time. It's going to enjoy that. That's also, like, the downside to the Gabby pick. It's like, well, but she can run a ball screen, too. So I'm not super concerned. But, like, yeah, if she doesn't have it, then it gets kind of tough. Who's shifty enough to deal with that? No one can really deal with Steph. So I'm not a fan of that. I'm going to be completely honest with you, Chief.
Hey, name a player on my team we can't run off screens. Off ball.
Yeah, I don't like it. Oh, man.
Feeling good, feeling great.
Yeah, I am not happy or excited to be here. Oh, we already got, and I don't want to ruin the spacing.
And this is your lesson in lineup construction, folks. It's not easy.
It's not. I hope you all are.
Bunch of players I wanted to pick. But I was like, this ain't going to work. Like, I wanted to pick Alyssa Thomas. But I was like, well, I could, but.
Then what? Yeah.
Like, where do I go after that?
Yeah, this is. Gosh darn it. So I got Chelsea and Gabby. I got Giannis and LeBron. Like, I need, like, a super spacer. But I also need to have a super spacer that can theoretically. I mean, we're going to be a switchy group anyway. Now that I think about it. Yeah, we're going to be a super switchy group. Against, then, yeah, then it's Jokic, though. Gosh darn it.
Yeah, who's got the Jokic matchup, bud?
What have you done? Shoot. I'll go off the cuff. We'll stay switchy. We'll also make sure we can do our best against Jokic. We'll take OG Anunoby.
OG. Oh, yeah. This is a very Nikias Duncan team.
We are taking OG. We're going to be strong. You know, we can put either LeBron or OG on Jokic, in air quotes, and we'll have Giannis roaming around.
How did we flip on this, by the way?
I don't know.
How did you take the defensive lineup and I took the offensive lineup? What is happening? Are we recording too many episodes of this pod?
Hey, when you do 230 episodes of a podcast and also holds 5 to 7 watch parties a week and also do Bleacher Report streams and also do NBA League Pass streams.
Yeah.
And also, yeah. And we follow each other on Twitter, you know. It's, yeah. We, yeah.
It happens. Yeah. Hey, yay, friendships. Dudes rock sometimes. What would my team try and do offensively? We're trying a ball movement. We got all sorts of movement, a lot of screening actions. We need to pick and roll. If we get a switch, we can go, I like the versatility there. Defensively, could get a little interesting size-wise, but I think we got enough versatility. Might make some zone in there.
We putting Kelsey on the block, buddy. go ahead and hide Kelsey on Gabby Williams. I dare you. I dare you. I triple dog dare you. Do it. Do it.
This man's just gonna be post-ups against Steph Curry and Kelsey Plum. You better beat Bill Laimbeer.
I hate everything that you just said. P.U. P.U.
Oh, that's good stuff. See, Richard, we delayed it, but there's a reason. Nikias, what's your team's philosophy gonna be?
Switch, get stops, run, mismatch hunt. Pound the paint, get to the free throw line, win the possession game.
Hey, you've been talking, you've been asking Becky Hammon too many questions. Can we get I'm sending you a different Zoom link.
Oh, man. Oh, you got an Aces guard over there too. Empty side pick and roll. We about the empty side. We putting Kelsey and Jokic in action.
In all honesty, I probably should have just drafted Asia too, but I bet my life you were going to pick Asia. So I was like, okay, that's why I went to Stewie first.
Listen here, buddy. Our team, 37 free throws to like 12 on your side. Katie ain't getting to the... Katie get to the line, he don't get to the line like he used to. You know, Kelsey not a high free throw rate person. Like Stewie can get there, so I give her that. We win the possession battle. Steph don't get calls like that. We win the possession battle.
Yeah.
We muggy it up. That's Steph a nice Curry. Stagger over there. Switch.
Yeah. That Steph screening for Jokic is gonna be fun though.
Yeah. You enjoy that. That's why we put the wing on. Yeah.
Nah, you know who I'm running off every screen?
Go ahead.
LeBron.
He's switching to standpoint yell.
Switch on Steph. Everyone go screen for Steph. Don't stop screening for Steph.
You got it, big dog. 91-86. That's all we aiming for. We need 91-86. Wow. Well, we 14 offensive rebounds. Giannis going to go a smooth 10 of 19 from the free throw line. It's going to frustrate me. Y'all going to be in foul trouble. That's how we doing it. That's just how we rolling. Let's end with.
You want to do the most improved one?
Yeah, let's go to the most improved one. Let's go to Eric, his round of questions. Thank you. And then we'll get to the others. Probably Thursday, honestly.
We'll get to them. Keep sending them in. We appreciate them. This again, is fun stuff. We want to give you the respect. You know what I mean? I don't want to give you all the quick no.
Yeah, he reserves that for me. So, question from Eric. Nikias and Steve, thanks for all the work you do keeping the basketball discourse fun, productive, and informative. Thank you. Here's a short series of extremely early NBA Most Improved Player Award-related questions. Number one, with an eye toward the changes in fit and opportunity for players after the busy draft free agency period of the offseason, if you have to choose now, you don't, in parentheses, who would you predict as this year's MIP?
So I built a short list. This has always been, I like that the dunker spot has just become the most improved battleground. It's fun. It's pretty much on brand. With the recent changes to the thought process, probably like Zion or Anthony Edwards, Mikal Bridges again, or Tyrese Halliburton, or Austin Reeves, or Cade Cunningham, or maybe like a Jalen Green if the Rockets win. That's where my head went. What say you?
Oh, But I also had a short list, but I'm just going to put it out there earlier. Trey Murphy III.
Why I oughta.
We got full. We going to get full starter Trey.
Why I oughta.
I don't need to say nothing else. That man is good. He's going to get plenty of opportunity. Brandon Ingram presses the X button a little bit more. That's a stealth. That's a stealth 20 point per game candidate next year.
We're gonna talk about that. We're gonna revisit that because, buddy, I'm looking to scroll and see. Please tell me I had that man voted. Nah, I left him off. Mm. Oh no, I did. I had a third. Mm. Man,
you see, you know what the issue is?
What?
You went so far in the bit. Y'all only picking the good players to win when all I've been saying the whole time is whoever improves the most. It could be role player.
Don't
it
you
could
say be that because Desmond Bane doubled his scoring average. And you said no. I don't want to hear it.
Do you have free throws? Oh, there's more questions. Never mind.
How you about to throw me and Eric over the top rope? That's so tough. What in the battle royal is this? Anyway, number two. Rank these five long shot MIP candidates in terms of likelihood to win this year's award. Trey Murphy III, Caleb Martin, Devin Vassell, Derek White, Tari Eason. Can I take this one first?
Well, I mean, I was just going to say, you can go first, but I was going to say, let's just dap it up. Trey Murphy going to be one, right?
Trey Murphy will indeed be one. I say Trey Murphy one. Devin Vassell feels like a very easy two for me, if for no other reason than like, is this a safe space? Got to be respectfully messy.
Yeah.
The voters are actually going to watch the Spurs this year. And so I think we're going to get the weight. This wing is really good, actually, from Devin Vassell. So I will put Devin Vassell 2 on this list. Number 3, probably Tari Eason. 4 is probably... Four is probably Derek White. He'll get full-blown starter minutes again. And the Celtics are going to be really good. He's taking over from Marcus Smart, so it's going to be a more obvious spotlight on him. And then 5, Caleb Martin. Like, I just don't think he gets the opportunity to really build, like, a most improved case. Like, one, I don't know if he, quote-unquote, survives the Miami thing if the Dame trade happens. And if the Dame trade does happen, it's not like he's about to have, like, 14 drives a game like we saw in like, the Eastern Conference Finals or something. Like, I don't know if he's going to have... He may shoot better from 3, get cleaner looks, cleaner drives. I don't think he's going to have enough of a bump to have like a real MIP case, if that makes sense. So that'd be my order. What say you, good sir?
Trey Murphy, 1. The tricky part for me is I'm thinking about opportunity. Like, are you going to have the opportunity to be loud? And so I put Derek White 2, mainly because if the scoring goes up and the assists go up and the Celtics win, does that give him enough? I go Tari Eason 3, but like it's minutes for me there. Mm-hmm. That's probably the only thing holding me back. Devin Vassell 4.
Okay.
Caleb Martin 5.
Okay.
No disrespect, Caleb. I think you're very good. I just don't know if you are going to hashtag make that leap to make those folks say, yeah.
A good shot. Number 3, question designed specifically for Steve. If the NBA gave you control of this award, what specifications or criteria would you give voters for this award?
Watch basketball games. Watch basketball games. That's the criteria I would give you. That's the criteria I give each and every one of you. Stop yelling at each other and trying to get validation and build your perception up. Just watch basketball and enjoy basketball. That's criteria 1, 2, and 3. Continue.
Okay, we're here. All right. For example, you could say no second year guys or specify players must be off their rookie contract. Would you create 2 awards? Basically, craft your vision for what this award should be going forward. I recall some very entertaining frustration and rants from Steve in particular from last year's awards discussion and the pod you had Zach Lowe on. So take this question in any direction you'd like, assuming it's not too irritating to entertain.
Nah, it's not too irritating. I tapped out last year. So I get it. I see the vision. Like if it becomes a level up award, I understand. Like, I'm not mad at Lowry or you know, Mikal Bridges getting love last year. Shea was a little much for me, considering how good he was. But I would have heard the argument enough that I could at least bet. But I would just say, let's just widen it out. Like, you know what I mean? Don't only look for those folks who have done that. you know, that's, I still think there's room to appreciate the other players who have improved in different areas, in other ways. So I just think, just try and widen it out a little bit. That's all I'd ask. I just don't want it to feel like, and this is not directed at you, Nikias, don't you say a word. Who's good that I didn't think was good before? Like, I, there's a little more nuance to it. Let's just find the sweet spot. What say you?
I got you. For me, I think it starts with playing at least 65 basketball games to qualify for the... I just needed the Steve reaction on that one. I'm sorry. I think for me, like, honestly, I guess I've kind of had like a general no to second year players, unless it's like super egregious. I guess egregious in a positive sense, if that's possible. Like, if you start as a rookie, and I guess like Darius Garland got high minutes in his rookie year, and he was like objectively, like, he was not very good as a rookie. If he went from that Darius Garland to like the Darius Garland we saw last year, like, I am fine giving Darius Garland MIP in his year, in the second year, if it's that drastic. But it's not like he went from 15 minutes to 33 or something like that. but beyond that, I honestly just generally want, I guess, more openness with the thought. Like, this is why I floated out the question, like, do you think someone could win the award twice? Like, I do. You do not think that's a possibility. Like, for me, my criteria is who improved the most. Who got better the most. In some years, that is the starter that went from good starter to all-star or all-star to superstar. In other years, that is low fifth starter who became a fringe all-star guy. Like, when we had Zach Lowe on, my MIP case for Bowl was like, he was not even playable. And he is now rotation piece. And that is a massive leap from where he was before. And naturally, Bowl just tailed off second half of the year that coincided with the Magic winning, et cetera, et cetera. But like, I'm fine with whatever your player status is. Like, I'm with you. Like, I don't want it to just be from all-star to superstar, that guy wins it every year. I don't think it should be the case. If that happens to be the guy that improved the most in that specific season, cool. But like, that's really my hard line with the award. Who improved the most? As literal and as cliche as that sounds, that's kind of it for me.
Okay, I'm with it.
You got to play 65 games though. Any close? Oh, yeah, there was a PS with that. Thanks to you both. I've been tuning in to a lot more WNBA games this year. Keep up the great work. Thank you. And keep watching the W. It's good hoop. We're having a lot of fun. We just spent like 30 minutes on Aces Liberty preview times two. Like, we can obviously dig into this stuff. Like, it's good hoop. So continue to enjoy. Steve, do you have free throws?
I do have free throws.
I got a couple, so I can go first.
Go ahead.
If you don't mind. Number one, now I say a couple, I literally have two. Number one, what was your favorite Hall of Fame speech from the weekend?
Man, it's hard to pick one. I find myself, actually, I keep going back to it just to rewatch it. Pals was really good. D Wade hit a whole bunch of notes, gave AI's flowers, the moment with his dad. It's hard to top that.
Yeah.
So I'd probably go D Wade for me.
Okay. Got you. Okay. Last question I had. What's more believable? Storyline behind the Blind Side, Daryl Morey, people on a plane.
People on a plane.
Okay. That's all I have. Your turn, sir. What you got?
That was hilarious. What's your favorite comfort food?
Comfort food, pizza. Definitely pizza.
What's your favorite cheat meal?
Fried?
Hey, is this a copy of respect? How mad was that, man?
Yes. Yes. Because not only did you get it wrong, you put some twang to it. Like, why would you do that?
But the confidence to pivoting right to chicken fried steak was wild.
Like, no, it's not chicken.
Are Rockets fans ready for the full Dylan Brooks experience?
No.
Is the bit that Shai Gilgeous-Alexander improves the jump shot and also continues to draw fouls?
That would be very pleasing to me, yes.
Okay. More important summer, Brandon Ingram or Anthony Edwards?
Because the answer is just yes. I would say... Honestly, quiet as kept is probably Brandon Ingram.
Really?
He's got to stay healthy. The playmaking has to remain consistent. Also, like, we're not too far from, like, his contract stuff becoming a real conversation. And, like, what direction the Pelicans want to go in, period, with, like, him, his new deal slash health, Zion health, etc. Like, Trey's going to be up for a new deal in a year and a half. I think there's just a little bit of just smoke with the Pelicans, period. Like, hey, we need to see how good this team is. Like, so I think, and Brandon Ingram answered a lot of questions in that regard. So I go Brandon Ingram.
Okay. What's more important for Anthony Edwards? Buckets, defense, or playmaking?
It's going to be... I think it's playmaking barely. I want to say defense really badly. Because he has all defense talent. He just does not put it together nearly enough. And definitely not off the ball. Like, that's ultimately why I just couldn't get there last year. Like, even when the general effort became more consistent, it was more so on ball. Off ball is just is too much. I think with the amount of times that he's going to see two on the ball, mm-hmm. especially while, like, Rudy's still there, mm-hmm. very important that he nails that, getting off the ball early, not turning it over, et cetera. And giving them a chance to kind of play out of that in the half court.
I got you. I fully understand. I like it. Who should get an award that there's no award available for? Brittany Sykes or Kelsey Plum?
I think it's... I was about to say, well, I think it's Brittany by default because I think Kelsey can make all W second team. And I was like, well, Brittany's going to make an all defense team. So, like, they both getting... I think they both should be awarded this year. I think it's probably Brittany, though. Because she's had to do a lot of heavy lifting for this Mystics team amidst all the injuries and some slippage elsewhere. And here she is, just flying around on defense and driving a bunch and knocking down pull-ups and driving more and blocking shots from the weak side and driving even more and sprinkling in more jump shots. She's doing a lot.
Brittany Sykes has had an incredible year. I believe more people should be talking about it. Love that signing. About 7 days away from that Mystics pump fake hitting your boy again. All right. Who would you rather run into in a dark alley? The Grit and Grind Grizzlies, the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, or Solo Sikoa?
What kind of question is that?
You gotta give me an answer.
Oh, geez. Okay. Do I have pizza with me?
No pizza.
Okay.
It's just you, a do-rag, and a wave cap, and a brush.
I'm just black in an alley. What the? I guess technically I haven't done anything to Solo, so I guess that's probably the answer.
Okay. Jeremy Sohan and Wimby both have blonde hair. A better tag team name. Shout out to all my international folks. La Chaleur de Harlem or the Bordeaux Blondes.
What the heck, man? probably the second one, I guess.
Okay, perfect. That was Harlem Heat in French. I tried my best.
Okay.
Who is more committed to the mess? James Harden or Chicago Maine Punk?
Definitely. Yeah, it's punk. It's punk. What that man got going on, dog? That man have been in. You talk about James Harden. Well, he's done this to three different teams. Man, how many companies that man been in at this point? That stuff follow you everywhere.
Chaos intensifies. You love to see.
Jesus, man.
That was my last one.
Okay. That's. Wow. Wow. Which, hey, we're, 12 minutes away from Monday Night Raw? So I guess we'll flow right into that. That's a great timing on our part. Anyway, thank you for listening to this episode of The Dunker Spot. If you have not already, please subscribe to us. We are on Apple, Spotify, Google, Stitcher, Podbean. wherever you get your podcast, you can find us. You can follow me on Twitter at NikaiasNBA. You can follow Steve on Twitter at SteveJones20. Join the Dunker Spot community. We're having lots of fun conversations in there. Join us for our online Dunker Spot watch parties. We're about to finish up recording and then watch Monday Night Raw because there's no basketball on tonight. So we're going to check that out. But we're watching wrestling. Naturally, we are watching WNBA basketball games since that season's going on. We've watched some older games on the NBA side. Like, we just watched the Dwayne Wade Kobe game last week. So we sprinkle those in. 2K streams, FIFA streams, reality television. We watch a little bit of everything. So the link should be hyperlinked in your podcast description. Just click on that. Enter your information. It is free. No shenanigans. If not, copy and paste the link into your browser. Once again, it is free. No shenanigans. Just come watch stuff with us. I feel like when I first started talking about this, like, hey, come watch hoops with us. At this rate, just come watch stuff. Come hang with us. The community is hilarious and messy, but hilarious. Also very inclusive. We chop it up with literally everyone. We talk life sometimes. We rant about the madness in the country and everything else. We have to. It's genuinely a safe space. So come rock with us. Come have some fun with us. With that, we will catch y'all later in the week.
Oh, man. Wonderful energy, Nikaias. Great stuff. Where did Taco fall? Sign. Mm-hmm.